Many years ago, there lived a great and noble king. He was wise, strong, fair, and all his subjects were happy to be thus. He was King Leopold, protector of Navarru, leader of her army, greatest king who ever sat upon the throne. Last time, our great and noble king examined that citadel of literature and culture, IC, finding it to be a well-organized and disciplined body politic, though perhaps a little overzealous in their prosecution of law. Riding on at the conclusion of the day's session of literary court, His Majesty travels increasingly perilous terrain. First, the rocky hills of Stillion, his half-horse nicked and pricked and scratched on those jagged and brittle rocks that litter those barren and smoky foothills. The crags and moorish slopes of the wastrel Grontin, the populace there cold and hardened, not forming so much as a welcoming parade, bent low in their struggle to survive the desolate, bumpy plain. Yet he pushes on, in the name of knowledge, now entering the swampy, eerie marshlands of Fille de Mer Verrou.
Oh my, dear Sipu.
Your Majesty.
I am struck at how my memory fails me. How I can recall, from those embers of fire since distinguished, riding upon these very lands with my father in royal progression, the crags and rocks less sharp, the hills less steep, the people more animate, seemingly, than they are now, all calloused and leathery. I wonder thus, is it that these lands, fringes and dregs that they are and have always been, have gotten somehow more desolate? Or if my own remembrances were simply false, painted with lighter hues, poeticized with gentler tones, sung with brighter keys than they deserved? And if so, why? Knowing as I did, even at so young an age, that I would someday be Supreme Navarru, my father having taken such measures to ensure that I was well-rounded and well-grounded in the quadrivium and in the means of the world actual, as he would say. Why then, would I still commit a fallacy of perception and then commit another one in maintaining it until now?
Your Majesty, I might advise against shading this in so negative a light. Your Majesty was, by unanimous consensus, a truly charming infant, a sage and darling toddler, and all his proclamations at that tender epoch of his life were a delight to all. Indeed, it is Your Majesty's innocent fancies which saved these very lands from mass destruction by fire, sword, and rape.
Not in that order.
Well, I must defer to you in matters of pillaging, Praetorus.
Perhaps you are correct, Sipu. My grasp of cognition, iron-sided and sturdy today, was certainly a tent pitched upon sand yesterday's past. I was easily distracted, if I recall.
You recall rightly, my liege. But your distractions were subjects of sublime mystery, the essence of reality, the purpose of existence, a distraction for which we were all pleased, even if it was hard to instill the fundamentals of the maths and the celestial movements.
Do you espy that figure over there? There's a man in the road. I say, you there! Well, he does not respond.
Perhaps he wishes for a formal pronouncement, my lord.
Practical thinking, Praetorus. I prithee, announce me.
Manlike figure in the road, You are accosted by the righteous and wise sovereign of these lands, Leopold de Montreux, King of Navarru, Duc Supreme de Crontin, overlord of the southern lowlands, and possessor and protector of all lands ceded to His Eminence by the contract of marriage between His Eminence and the deceased Sabine, ex-Duchess of Golol, ex-Queen of Navarru, and eldest ex-daughter of Charles Charles de Gros, Emperor of Hortense. His Majesty, who is thus thy lord and master, requests of thee to announce thyself, to proclaim, if thou art warranted, from whose house thou hailst, which name thou take, and which lands and titles thou attends to, so that His Majesty might enter into parley with thee. Arise thou and respond in kind.
Still, he does not yet move.
Perhaps he did not hear our call, my lord.
That I am incredulous.
Man-like figure in the road, you are accosted by the righteous and wise sovereign of these lands, Leopold de Montreux, King of Navarru, Duc Supreme de Crontin, overlord of the southern lowlands, and possessor and protector of all lands ceded.
Praetoress! I believe that he has heard before and again now.
Then he ignores His Majesty's calls?
So it seems.
Why then, my lord, let me simply bring my blade to bear swift and hard upon his neck. Let this obdurate become pliant to your Majesty's will.
Under normal circumstances, Praetorus, I would concur that you think rightly. However, I will you stay your spears and swords, for this man intrigues me. Not so much for the temerity of such non-responsiveness, no, but for his very countenance, or should I say, lack thereof.
Your Majesty confuses me with his verbiage.
Well, look at how blank his eyes are. Look at how his heart seems to beat reluctantly, not so much pumping his blood and humors through him with a lub-dub, but with a sigh. How can a man come to be this way, I wonder? So I design to converse with this specimen for a time, to learn of him and of his soul. I say, you who, inert in all aspects of his person, sits solemnly in the road, silent, akin to rocks and to boulders, showing not the slightest vestiges of thought or discomfort, all the while sitting...
But you are mistaken, Your Majesty. I think aplenty, and at all hours of the day.
Well, you speak.
Obviously, I do.
And I am known to you.
Yes, your gorilla announced you.
Fiend! Villain! I'll run you through with sword and spear.
Indeed, Sir Praetorus announced me as per custom, but you are so unmoved. I'm fascinated, and I wonder many things about you.
You wonder about me? When all about you there are nearly an infinite amount of improbabilities, a whole world of inconsistencies and inexplicable shortcomings.
I do not think that I quite follow.
Nor do I.
You speak in riddles. What is your name?
I have been called Niles all of my life.
I do not recall of any Niles known for sitting in the middle of roads and speaking in riddles. Sipu, do you know of this man?
My liege, I do not, but I would proffer that, by his robes and the tattered and worn copy of Nijinsky's All Is Not, that he is probably a former student of the conservatory over at IC, perhaps a student of philosophy and formal logic, who, having been exposed to the shunned and ignoble curriculum of Nijinsky, shambled from that besmirched institution, mouth agape and golem-esque, oppressed, like so many others back in those trying times, by a gloomy and despotic worldview based in fear and nihilism and perverse logical proofs, predicated upon the most radical and destructive skepticisms. A complete disbelief in phenomenological reality, indeed of anything at all.
Is this so?
I suppose that's one way to describe it. Yet though the trail may be marked with the signpost of the king reading Royal Footpath, or be casually referred to as King's Road, or even just The Road to those who live near it, still it leads to the same place.
And what is your meaning in using such a
your
phrase?
Your Grace, I must strongly suggest that we simply ignore him and his
meaning,
meandering...
Your Majesty and entourage, that he who is your attendant can very well use his fancy words, arrange them in whatever series of clauses that he wishes, can make use of adjectives and whatever else he wishes to try, as per his investment in perpetual servitude to his linear and dogmatic line of thought, to describe my arc of cognition in some unflattering manner, yet it doesn't change fundamental truths. We could converse in the languages of other lands, or by hand gestures, or by Pindaric ode. Truth emerges when the banners and the trumpets and the acrobats and the courtiers and the spears and legions of speech and linguistic color are silent and gone. Thus, my constant silences.
Your Majesty, I must point to this directly as an example of the sort of indirect and self-indulgent prattle that this man traffics in at all times.
I am intrigued. This great falling out at the IC Conservatory happened whilst I was too young to appreciate and to contemplate it. Indeed, I had believed that most of the heretics had been fully exiled.
Cockroaches can fit through the smallest of cracks, Your Grace.
See how he assumes the role of anthropomorphic physician, as though he can, by his fancy words and insinuations, transform me into a bug and the fundamental truth of reality into my excretion.
Thus, Sipu, my intrigue. I wish to hear him explain
but
this.
But there is no need, Your Grace. It's all pedantic rubbish.
But all the more better to know what I am rejecting, that I might bolster my rejection, Sipu. Tell me, Niles, did you study under Nijinsky?
Well, he didn't sit atop me, but he was athwart myself and the other pupils.
See, yes. What obstinate and pointless verbal maneuvers he engages in.
So then, did you know Nijinsky?
Did I know him? Well, I knew his name, I knew his appearance, I knew the sound of him. I was, towards the end of his tenure, a teaching assistant to him. But I did not know him. If I am right in interpreting Your Majesty's use of know to mean that I knew secrets or some desires or inner thoughts of he who was called Nijinsky, does Your Majesty know himself?
Well, I think so.
Who are you?
He is Leopold, King of Navarru, Doc Supreme.
I mean, who are you? Who is Leopold? What is he besides the inheritor of titles to distribute among noblemen?
Well, but that is my purpose in the realm.
Purpose, Your Grace?
Why, yes. I am mandated to rule the lands which belong to my and my father's and his father's and his father's and his father's house. Delegating titles is a means of maintaining cohesion and order within the realm.
But why, Overlord of the Lowlands, Leopold?
Because I must. There are documents and written agreements and inscribed proclamations of assemblies which dictate the terms of my royal authority.
And why is that?
Because it is just and fair.
Is it?
Well, yes, I believe so.
And so, when His Majesty lays himself abed, drowsy and listing fatigue all about him, corralling him to pastures of his sleepy mind's own fabrication, he rests secure that all will be the same when he rises?
Yes.
Oh, and he is confident that, more likely than not, he will rise the next day.
Well, I should say yes.
I am curious, then, what your majesty thinks of sleep.
Sleep? Well, it is a deep rest.
A deep rest? So then, the mind rests and the body rests and the heart rests?
Well, no. I continue to breathe while I am asleep.
And His Majesty is sure of this?
Yes, I am.
How is he to be sure if he is not actually awake?
Well, I am sure because I wake when I wish and do not suddenly awaken, grasping and gasping for air.
Does His Majesty believe that he exists to himself while he sleeps?
Well, how do you mean?
Meaning, Your Majesty, do you, while asleep, experience sensations?
Sometimes, yes, whilst dreaming.
Whilst dreaming. And so does Your Majesty take it that his dreams are real?
I suppose that some might be portentous, but no, I do not take my dreams to be literal or real.
So then it is possible to experience something that seems to be real, but is in fact not real. So then it is possible to be in a state of being where one does not have any sensation, does not, for the sake of brevity and simplicity, borrowing these terms, exist to themselves, seemingly or otherwise. So then it is possible that we are in fact always asleep. Our experiences all chimeras. Our existence and the existence of our phenomenology merely illusionary.
Preposterous. 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 Preposterous.
Perhaps in not so stringent a manner as my attendant, I must still agree with him and believe that you are stretching.
And how so, my lord?
Well, we are very clearly standing before you.
Well, look, now I have closed my eyes and I see nothing.
Yet you still converse with us.
That's a conscious choice. I could have easily continued meditating upon nothing.
The most honest thing he has uttered all this time.
Listen to him.
Well, perhaps you may convince yourself that nothing that you perceive is real. Harangued and buffeted by the slanderous and heretical teachings of your former master, leaving you little spiritual or mental solace, yet I have a lifetime's worth of experiences that I can recall vividly, only an infinitesimal portion of which involve you.
Do you?
Indeed I do, Sir Niles.
Can you list them?
List them? There is too much to recall to list all
but
of.
But you are certain that they happened?
Of course I am.
But, my liege, if you cannot recite to me your life up to this exact moment, why should I, who has never seen you before this day, take your word for it? How can I be expected to believe that you, who again I have not seen until just 10 minutes ago, simply isn't a madman who is flanked by other madmen, wandering around these barren regions loudly proclaiming yourself to be the king?
But I have the royal vestments, this sash, the scepter, the gilded and bedazzled sword of my forefathers. Look at these silks.
And could not the true king have been murdered, his clothes falsely adorned by a manic pretender?
Well, no. I can list many aspects of my kingly life in exquisite detail.
As you can of some dreams, Your Majesty.
Yes, but that isn't analogous.
Perhaps they are not. But then I ask now, do I exist, sire?
Obviously you do, Niles.
I do. But did I exist, Your Majesty, to you before 10 minutes ago?
No.
So my existence, which is now, at this moment, to His Majesty a matter of such trite obviousness that he begins to grow annoyed with me, was, however, just 10 minutes ago, so out of his mind that it could not be so?
Yes.
But then why does His Majesty not extrapolate these premises and conclusions to the broader world?
Well, because they don't extrapolate.
Why not?
Because I know that I exist. I have visceral memories of my father, my mother, the Castle Neveru. I remember strong feelings and emotions, friends and enemies won and lost, my pre-ex-mortal ex-queen, the love I had for her ere I first espied her on our wedding day. And I am aware of these feelings now. I am thinking and feeling and have some innate sense right now, as faint and as intangible and as arduous to describe as it may be, that I do exist, that I must exist. Quite simply, I just know.
A moving soliloquy, my liege. But still, there is no basis, no solid logical foundation on which you can hang your robes. Do you not feel that fictional characters in some books are endowed with what seems like fully formed internal logic and emotions? Indeed, fully imaginary characters have made as impassioned declarations of their own existence as well. What makes you think that you are any different? Indeed, you can feel pain in dreams, or in stories, or in your idle fancies, pain that isn't real. There is no real or adequately explainable basis for any phenomenological sensation. Pain is an illusion. Love is an illusion. There is no logical reason to deny that we aren't in fact just dismembered voices of one person sitting alone in his bedroom. What tact could you possibly take to prove to me that you were ever even coronated, ever even born, ever even have seen...
Interest. Yet you bleed and call out in pain. So then is my spear real?
That doesn't prove anything. You're just committing a logical fallacy. If anything, this just proves how despotic the illusion really is.
Then you aren't feeling any pain?
No, there's no true pain.
Then you won't mind if I make use of my... Yeah. Your Majesty.
That was rather gruesome. But then again, I guess that proves the point.
Sipu, Praetoris, let us ride on and get to more pleasant climes as we progress.
Our great king's wisdom is put to the sword and prevails yet again. He has outmaneuvered the last skeptic in all of Neveru. But he faces still more peril, which we will discover next time we drop in on the legendary exploits of Leopold, King of Navarre.